FYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stones.
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop?
Ratchet, if you'll take the chorus stop.
Transformers, defenders of truth, robots who fight in disguise.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, TFYLP, episode number 169, recorded September 16th, 2015. We're broadcasting on a different night or different day and a different time today than we normally do. Normally, we're at 9 p.m. Eastern on Friday nights on our YouTube channel, but today we're actually doing it on Wednesday in the middle of the afternoon. Why, you ask? Well, some of us won't be available for the show Friday night, and some of us will be stroking our Metro Titans and licking them and making them our own, as Mr. Rick Alvarez is doing right now. He's just loving on it so gingerly. Yes. It's his new child. but yeah, we're some of us won't be available on Friday. Sponsor Captured Prey, the owner, Orson, his birthday is Friday, and I'm going to be celebrating it with him. And Jim Black, his wife's birthday is also Friday. And, and we know what he's going to be doing.
Dishes, lots and lots of dishes.
Yes. Yeah. And breakfast in bed. That's what she needs.
Well, that can't be helped. It's hard to keep on the plate. You know. Just
and as falls. Usual, Don will be stroking his pussy.
Meow.
He has a cat named Massey.
You see that man right there?
If you're wondering, that's why.
I think Massey's the most important, most popular cast member as it is.
Yes.
I think so.
Yes, he is. We need to get him one of those little medallions, you know, that hangs down from the neck, and it's the TFYLP logo. That would be awesome.
He's finally gotten used to his regular collar. Anything else on him, he will immediately just. Cause I tried putting a little bell on there. When I let him out on his own. No, we're not going to do that.
Well, little introductions. I am, of course, your host, Deron Land, aka Weird Wolf. Along with me this afternoon is Headmaster Don.
Hey, buddy.
Rick Alvarez.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Hang Yip Chan.
Hi,
from
everybody.
The future.
Yeah, but it's 4:30 a.m.
His video is delayed by his video is on FaceTime delay, so there's no video for him, unfortunately.
It'll show up without the audio sometime tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yes. No, it's more like my room is a bomb site.
So it's like watching. It's like watching early Ultraman episodes then.
He's communicating to us via subspace. And also joining us is Jim Black, a.k.a. Moroni Prime.
Hi. I hate this thing. I can't find the instructions, and it looks horrible right now.
Oh, wow. Thank you for telling us. Bumblebee's
It's like a fat Worf or Cybertron Bumblebee, and I'm not sure really what I'm doing.
That's pretty accurate. And Bumblebee. He's pretty fat.
Bumblebee is not sure what you're doing either.
Right. Got a good one for like $2.
He's like, golly gee willikers, Mr. Wilson. I don't think you should be touching me there.
Wow, that went downhill really quickly.
All right. Can we talk about me or something else, please?
Yeah, we're not supposed to be touching. We're not supposed to be touching you there either.
Yeah, no, Rick. Let's talk about
something. No contact right, with the player.
For those of you who've been hiding under a rock for the last few months or so, Play With This 2 is getting ready to kick off with version 2 of the Kickstarter. I believe somebody on our cast here knows a little bit about this, so I'm going to kind of like let him talk.
Yes.
So
take it away, Jim.
Yeah, take it away, Jim. Yes. And now for a really good show.
Okay, well, it's no secret I'm one of the guys behind Play With This 2.
One of.
You can play with their stuff, but you can play with this too. So this Friday we're launching our Kickstarter. It's going to be super simple. There are 10 figure options to choose from. There are 4 painted versions of Boneyard, 4 painted versions of Jetstrike, and then 2 unpainted versions of each, which come in all white, and that is the Play With Yourself Customizer Edition. You can mix and match the parts, paint them however you want to paint them. This is kind of what we have been working up to since our first Kickstarter, which came oh so close. But it's I'm happy to say we've lowered the price down from $55 a figure to $39 a figure with a few more parts, and we're going to have some better packaging on them. So this Friday it all kicks off, and you too will be able to own one of our 6.5-inch action figures. And it's really easy. You're going to be able to pledge for 1, 2, 3, 4 figures. And then at the end of the Kickstarter, you'll get a survey saying, which figures do you want? Do you want a Boneyard? Do you want a Wastelander? Do you want a customizer edition? Or if you want 3 of the same figure, that's fine too, as long as you buy
them. I want them all.
Well, if you want them all, last time our all-in option was $800. This time it's $390, I think.
Wow.
So
that is much more.
We've made some big improvements as far as pricing goes. Our goal has always been to try and keep them priced as affordable as possible to get them into Don's hands. Yeah. So Friday, it all happens Friday.
Nice.
In order to get Don to buy one, you need to paint one, and also for Proto Man, you need to paint one kind of red with flames on his chest. And name him Carry This Too.
I'll tell you what. How about if we come up with a villain who's got a square head and he's blonde, and we call him Squarehead Saint Blonde?
Yes.
How about?
Hey, you could use Jetstrike's wings as the yellow spoiler too.
Or you could. We could do that. We could do that if we want to flush our money down the toilet. Yeah, absolutely.
We could even make a variant with some antlers and some hooves.
Well, I didn't want to spoil the surprise, but a Rodimus McPrimal might be a stretch goal.
Really?
But we're not going to unlock any. We're not going to show any stretch goals until later. So halfway through, we'll send out a survey asking all the backers, what stretch goals do you guys prefer? Do you guys want to do a figure? Do you guys want some extra heads? Do you want some extra gear? Do you want some new like appendages? I know that sounds weird, but some new arms.
Talking about getting heads and appendages here.
Yeah. Do you want tech drones? So we're going to let the people decide what they want as far as stretch goals go. And
how do you feel about tentacles?
I love tentacles.
Okay.
I love tentacles, just not the way the Japanese use them in their anime.
Okay, I'm already looking at these, and with the new with the new pricing I'm in. Now, if you can somehow work out a set of Neo Knight-ish looking figures as a set, maybe?
Well, you know, anything's possible. We're going to kind of put everything in the hands of the consumer and see what they want. And the people will decide what they want as far as what comes next. How's that sound?
Yeah, that's fine. Just putting it out there for you.
All right. Okay. I hear you.
Messy.
Feeling you, playa.
No.
Well, really look forward to this. So when is it you plan on going live with the Kickstarter and
we are going live this Friday.
This Friday.
Yes. I don't know what time. We may be popping off maybe Thursday night late. I don't know. But come Friday morning, you'll be able to go to Kickstarter. And if everyone can tweet or Facebook at Kickstarter, help us become a staff pick. Help us get more publicity. And just let them know you want us to be a staff pick. And that will hopefully ensure that our Kickstarter goes through this time.
Yes. Awesome. Really look forward to it. Lots of great stuff. I mean, having held some of the stuff in hand myself, it's amazing detail, amazing stuff. I can't wait.
Well, I can't wait either. So in 35 some days, I'll either be in a really good mood or thinking, okay, what can I do now?
That Metro Titan looks awful expensive to sell.
Look how it dwarfs me in size. Like,
yeah.
I'm so small next to it.
That's also what she said.
Insane Galvatron says that a lot too.
So speaking of fun size, what scale did you say that these were again, Rick?
These are going to be 6.5 inch. So mostly we've kind of upscaled them a little bit.
Okay.
We've redesigned them to share more parts between the figures so that we can, again, lower the cost. And
it's a good
and
size.
It all happens Friday.
Yeah, that's a pretty good size.
Well, it's
adequate.
It's adequate, yeah. They look really cool next to your Master Universe figures, next to your say Transformers Generations figures, whatever you collect. They look good next to everything.
Even Combiner Wars?
Oh, well, especially Combiner Wars.
Ooh, nice.
Who doesn't want to have a 6.5-inch guy attack Superion?
Right?
I know, I do.
His kneecaps are in terrible, terrible danger.
Hey, you got to chop down a tree somehow.
Or with one of those spike barbed maces that he has, you know, just yeah. Or that skull scythe. That skull scythe is the thing there.
Yeah.
But all right. Well, everybody. Whenever Friday comes along, look for the play with this too. I'm sure we'll be tweeting it on the TFYLP Twitter account as well as the Facebook group. Check that out. Support it. Give it all the love and support. Share it, like it, and all that stuff.
Tweet to Kickstarter.
Yes. Make Rick a very, very happy man so that we can all be very happy people whenever we get these toys in our hand.
Oh, and one more thing. The Jet Strike and all the Striker figures, they all come with a super secret part.
Oh.
And you won't know what those two parts are until you get them in hand. Only eight people know what the parts are.
Is it the weather dominator?
As far as I know, and I could be wrong, but I've done some research, and as far as I can tell, there's never been an action figure to come with this accessory before. Ever.
Wow.
So,
nugget of antimatter.
It's obviously, you know, there's anatomically correct figures out there, so it's not that, Don.
No.
They are coming with a Massey Ferguson accessory. It's a little bitty Massey that they can sit there and stroke on their throne, you know, just kind of like Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget.
What we can do is if Don donates to the Kickstarter, if he pledges, I think we could put Massey in the digital comic.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, he'll just have a real quick death scene.
Oh, but he'll keep coming back because he has nine lives.
Yeah, he could be the Kenny McCormack of our comic.
Well, see, that's the thing about cats. They never really stay dead, because as soon as they get up to the pearly gates, St. Peter standing there is like, okay, figure it out. In or out. Yeah. Make up your mind.
You know, that space cats have more than 9 lives, Don, so space cats. I think Massey might be okay.
So, going back to the pendant idea, instead of maybe the TFYLP logo in the comic, have Massey with a little RC on the pendant,
and it'll be like a headmaster type thing. It's like a key. You got to plug it in somewhere.
And right above RC, all it will say is when.
So when? So the Massey key would plug into the mass hole.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And not only would it plug into the mass hole, it would also speak and constantly ask, when are you going to make an RC?
When?
I have not. Doran, can we move along?
Okay, before this podcast gets any more weird.
I think we've kicked the Kickstarter to death here.
Don't worry, we're worried about poor Massey.
Before our podcast gets any more weird this afternoon, and I'm only going on like 4 hours sleep. Jim Black just got home and everything. He's not wearing any pants. Rick Alvarez.
Oh no, I am wearing pants now. I'm wearing Rick's pants.
That's what happened to them.
Yes. Yep. We are here. We're going to talk about the Transformers in comic books. That's going to be the focus of our episode today. From the Marvel Generation 1 all the way through the current Dreamwave. I want to take a little brief overview on this. And TFYLP, in our past, we haven't typically covered a whole lot of comic topics. We did try a short-lived show. It was only a couple episodes called TFYLP Newsstand with Insane Galvatron and I Am Unicron. But timing, scheduling, it just didn't work out. And everything, but we're going to start focusing a little bit more on in the coming weeks on some comic related topics. Got a few comic related guests lined up. We're going to have some of those, so it's going to be some great things to talk about. Also, if you're following the show, you'll know that for the last few weeks we've been doing a little bitty thing called the Unite With Us giveaway. This giveaway is really awesome. It is your chance to win a complete Combiner Wars Minasaur that includes Breakneck, that is really, really hard to get a hold of. If you do get a hold of one, probably going to pay an arm and a leg. Wink. For it.
I make that joke and I get groaned at.
Okay. I did it with style.
It's on the delivery.
And I get the
sound. I get it. Oh, because they're combiners.
Yeah.
It's in the delivery, and Don's was more like DiGiorno.
Yeah. Pardon me, but do you have a degree, Poupon?
No, what I said was, you know, people like Tobias, living overseas, have to import all these figures, and it costs them an arm and a leg. And you all groaned and moaned. And it's like,
I said it again.
All right, Don, give the joke a rest. We heard it already.
But yes, we are giving away a whole Combiner Wars Minasaur, mint on seal card, mint in box, for Motormaster. It also includes Blackjack and Off-Road. So you're getting all of the figures that go with Minasaur in this giveaway. All you have to do is listen to the show and listen for the clues. After the sixth clue, you give us the answer via Twitter, which is preferred because I'm constantly monitoring it right now, or our Facebook group. And we'll go by the timestamps and kind of see how, you know, who was in first. And whoever answers first wins. It is preferred that you do follow us on Twitter and join the Facebook group. That way it would be easier to contact the person who wins this awesome giveaway and help us keep track of how well we're doing in this giveaway. This This giveaway is being sponsored to us by our sponsor, Captured Prey. Great toys, great prices, great service, CapturedPrey.com. They are providing the toys, and we are providing the listen and hopefully the fun for everybody listening.
And this weekend, he'll be providing my Devastator.
Yes.
Yes.
Happy birthday, Orson.
But we'll be giving away the clue, which is the fourth clue in the Combiner Wars Unite With Us giveaway by TFYLP. We'll be giving that away a little bit later in this show for the fourth clue. If you want to listen to the other clues, go to episode 166 and listen all the way through this one, and you'll be caught up. For full rules and details on this giveaway, check out tftalk.net and look for the Unite With Us giveaway on there.
Just as a note, don't ask any of us for the clues. That's a no-no. We can't tell you.
Don't ask for clues and don't offer guesses, because that's not fair to everybody who might not get it right away. We want to give everybody a fair chance, and quite honestly, the final answer will be something that maybe not every fan might know, but you know, it'll be something that if you do a little research, you can find it. It makes sense.
I have no idea at this point.
Is it Connecticut? I bet it's Connecticut.
Unfortunately, Jim, you were disqualified. So
the price was not right.
This contest is open only to people around the world. However, if you are outside the U.S. and Canada, if you participate in this giveaway, you agree to pay for the shipping to your country, wherever it may be. So, you know, that's just kind of offset the cost, because outside the U.S. and Canada, quite frankly, it would cost an arm and a leg.
I love that joke.
Yes. We went back into that well again. But Transformers Comics. All right. That was kind of an awkward segue. I'm sorry. But you know, back in the day, we had Marvel Comics, you know, famous for X-Men and all the like. Well, they also brought out the Transformers comics in, late 83, early 84? The comic actually predated the cartoon, did it not?
Got it here.
And the original commercials for the toys actually said, "Follow the adventures of the Transformers in Marvel Comics." Marvel Comics.
Yeah.
Looks to be September 1984.
Yeah. Okay. So I've got a comic box here with almost all the entire G1 run, but I'm missing like the first seven issues. Like spotty issues throughout, and I just haven't went back and fulfilled them. Although I've read them at one point or another, all, you know, I love the comics, especially the new IDW comics. There's some great stories there. Although in my busy life, I've got to pick and choose what I spend my time on, and between the podcast, collecting, spending time with family, photography. I do some freelance work for Captured Prey, no secret there. So, you know, my time is very limited. And reading the comics is just something I don't afford a luxury to do. Although once in a while I may pick up one and read it. I love it. I've read some of the great stuff. For example, The Last Stand of the Wreckers, I had the had it here somewhere. Yes, the trade paperback. Great, great story.
Nick Roach.
What's that?
Nick.
Ah, yes. And I have an AVG warning here. Okay.
I didn't do it.
You are up to date. Okay, thank you, AVG, for interrupting my podcast.
You know, it was actually because of that. While I was at Hasbro, I remember just being so impressed by Last Stand of the Wreckers that I contacted Nick and I said, "Hey man, I loved your designs. Do you mind doing some work for Hasbro?" And he was game for it.
Sweet. Nice. So I guess the best thing we can do is start off with what was your first exposure to comics, the Transformer comics, and what is your best memory with Transformer comics? And, you know, Rick, since you've had some dealings with that, yeah, I'm sure your story will be the most awesome. So let's kick it off with that.
I used to live in South America, in Venezuela, so I didn't have access to the comics or to last part of season 3 of the animated show. So I remember when I came back to this country, we stopped into, I think it was a 7-Eleven, and there it was, the very first Transformers comic that I've ever seen, and I had to buy it. It was issue number 80.
Mm.
And I didn't understand why it said last issue in a 4-part. Miniseries. I had no clue. I'd never read a Transformers comic before then. Kept going back to that store, back to 7-Eleven. Could never find any more issues of it.
Could you possibly have been any later to the party?
that was my first exposure to...
He could have came on during Generation 2.
To Transformers. And then, not too long afterward, Generation 2 came out, and I remember G2 was just the best story. I absolutely loved everything about Generation 2, and to this day, it's probably my second favorite story. And from having worked on Regeneration 1, it kills me that Regeneration 1 saga kind of erased everything that was G2.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw it over to Don. I'm going to tag him in.
Okay. My very first I'll preface by saying, my father was a really great man, but he felt I shouldn't be spending money on comics and toys and stuff. So I had to sneak in my very first issue. I found it at a flea market for $1. Issue number 7, Ratchet standing on the mountain with the Dinobots. And now the Dinobots, they're on the side of the mountain. And that was my first issue with Transformers. And I started collecting after, and eventually I was able to just get them outright. And, buy them like that. That's my first exposure to Transformer comics. I'd seen them before, but I couldn't buy them because I couldn't sneak them in. And, you know, being in a flea market and having my book bag in the car, I couldn't put back to bed, so I didn't need everything. So that was my first exposure to Marvel comics, 7, which at the time struck me as weird because it was focusing on Ratchet. And watching the cartoon, Ratchet was usually not a focus of the episode. And then I was learning how the Marvel continuity was different than the TV continuity, because the Dinobots were different and all that kind of stuff. But probably my favorite Marvel G1 memory is probably Headmasters 1-4, because it introduced the Headmasters, it introduced a...
High five, Don.
Yes. Yeah. I think it introduced a much better origin. As much as I love Rebirth, when David Wise had to pare it down from 5 episodes to 3, mm-hmm. I think we lost a lot of story exposition and just pacing in that issue, mm-hmm. In that series. But I think Headmasters 1-4 and was a great way of introducing the Headmasters. It made a lot more sense than the other methods we've seen before. I like it when it ties into the main storyline around 36 or 37, when they arrived on Earth and Galen died. Spoilers, Galen dies. And then Spike takes over from there. But that's my favorite run of the comics, is probably the Headmasters 1-4, and right up 50, when, you know, as far as that whole Headmasters. And then Basically, that run for me ended with Optimus Prime Power Master. When Prime comes back, he's reborn as a Power Master. That whole run for me is my favorite arc of the Marvel G1 universe.
I have to agree with you there. Hang, what about you?
So by the time Transformers had come out, I think I only knew about the cartoon and not about the comic book series. If,
And then I started getting into comic books with Spider-Man. And I think the first inkling I had of Transformers was the UK comics, because somebody had like gone to a secondhand bookshop and got rid of the entire UK collection. And they were like selling each issue for like 50 cents each. So I just bought everything. And I guess to me, it was really weird how different the entire storyline was, because having started from the cartoon, the comic is a massive contrast. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Target 2006 was what am I reading?
Yes.
And I was like, what am I reading?
It's like, how did this happen? How did it? Whoa. Anyway.
That's kind of how I feel about the new G.I. Joe Transformers crossover. Who let this happen?
I'm reading and going, this makes no sense. Huh? Every issue is a, huh? And I'm still buying it. I don't understand why.
It's Hasbro. They make you buy stuff and you don't know why. You buy it and you sit there and you're like, why do I have this?
It's that same reason why I own a Transformers Energon kite. The same reason.
I think it's six of those.
And on that note, Tim, why don't you go fly it?
Okay. No, I think it's just because it has the Transformers brand name on it. And I think that's what does it. Maybe subconsciously, I'm not sure, but.
Fans of the franchise.
It's a sickness, man.
Yes. I've got an Energon kite. I've got the little mini skateboard from, what was that, Classics or Generations or something. I don't know if you can see it up here. I've even got the little, puzzle that came with the Robot Heroes Optimus Prime packed in on top of it.
I have that very same lunch pail, by the way, the red one that's over your head in the video. I've actually got it right over here, so... I've had it since that one right there. Yeah, that one. I've actually got that one, and I've even got the little thermos that goes inside of it too.
Yeah, I don't know if I have the thermos for that or not.
Yes, awesome. But anyway, I digress. Hank.
And then I think like everyone else has just gone into G2. Like G2, I thought was really good till the end. I think was really weird, but the rest of it was I really enjoyed it.
So what was your very first comic that you got a hold of? Do you remember which one?
From Transformers?
Yeah.
The first issue of the UK comic.
Okay.
It really is. That was it. And like I said, the UK stuff, I really liked it because, you know, it introduced characters like Death's Head. What is that? Characters like Death's Head, and I really liked that character. I followed him into the normal Marvel universe after that, and then G2 came out, and that was fantastic, and I really liked it, and then Regeneration came out, and I was really excited till that last arc, and then I cried like, what am I reading again? Except that this was worse than Target 2006, because it really broke my heart, whereas 2006 was really, I have no idea what's going on. And anyway, I'll hand over to Jim.
You felt like Tally while you were reading it.
Oh man, what's going on here? What's going on, man?
I'll hand over to Jim so he can tell us about his beloved story about the comics.
Well, I just want to say I'm ecstatic that I found out I actually do have a thermos inside that thing. I've never opened it. And upon investigation, it seems that there has probably never been anything inside that thermos because it actually smells like that new plastic smell. Mm. So that was interesting. At any rate, as far as my first exposure to any Transformer comic ever, I honestly wouldn't remember what issue it was. I just remember that I was mystified by Megatron's weird-looking helmet and that it was different from the cartoon. But it was on the little comic rack in the local Bridwell's grocery store there, Paris, Illinois, like 87 or 86. I don't even remember how old I was even. But yeah, it was a G1 Marvel issue, and Megatron was weird looking. That's my memory of it. As far as when I was older and a more of a fan as opposed to just a little kid, that would be the ill-fated Dreamwave. when I found out that they were doing Transformers comics, you know, and I was old enough to have, you know, gained employment and have a paycheck to buy said comics. So I went in and with the Dreamwave Comics, and I did the first series. I did the variant covers and the exclusive cover. I think it was Omega Supreme. I think it was the third printing.
That was the third printing. Yeah.
Yeah. I did a couple sporadic issues after that, but then I just kind of fell out of it. But they were neat. It was an interesting
series to get into, man. I remember it so clearly, not to interrupt, but the first Dreamwave series, there was virtually no talking whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It focused on the bubbly art of Pat Lee.
Just no surprise.
But then you have the complaints and then the feedback. And by the time the second run was coming out, there's all this dialogue in it, and it's just overtaking all the art.
Yeah.
I hated the Dreamwave comics simply because they were so short. I mean, they were what, like 7-8 pages? Something like that? I mean, well, they weren't very long at all.
It seemed that way, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very, very, very content light. It was all just flash pages and pretty pictures.
Mm-hmm. Well, for the cost of the comic books, I mean, yeah, I have a lot of them, but they are probably some of my least favorite, honestly. I mean, that's no knock. I mean, some of the art was pretty nice.
Yeah, they still use the Dreamwave art to this day on different like toothbrushes and
That's because it's the only thing they have in high res that's easily available to them, unfortunately.
It's all good, except for the fact that sometimes the dimensions are way off. Like, you know, Optimus having a neck that's like this long, but you can't see it because of his gun in the way.
Mm.
You know, things like that.
It's the wrong life.
Not just that, but also the fact that Pat Lee seemed to like to draw all of his Transformers like they were squatting to take a dump. I don't know why, you know.
When he drew them, that is.
Yeah.
Because there were several instances where other people would draw them for him in his style, and he would take credit for it.
Yeah.
I can speak from experience and say that's definitely not hearsay. That was something that was discussed when Pat Lee kind of showed his head again.
I honestly don't think he knows the difference between Transformers and bubble letters. I think it kind of confuses the two.
You know, Dreamwave had some great art. They had some amazing talent. Don Figueroa came from the world of Dreamwave.
Sure, sure.
And even though he's not really associated with the brand anymore, he really did have some amazing contributions to some character designs. And it's a shame that
he didn't want to be part of the brand anymore. Well, what wasn't his name even engraved on the gun for Titanium Optimus?
I don't remember that. I do remember that there were some issues with Dreamwave and IDW, IDWA, as I call them. Mm-hmm. They work on a different basis than say Marvel or DC, where a creator would get certain royalties back if there is a reprint or if there's a TV deal based off that work. If they created a character, they had some rights. Not so with Transformers. It was commission work. Mm-hmm. You got a flat rate, and that was it. Hasbro, because it's a licensed brand, Hasbro retained the right to everything. They owned everything. Mm-hmm. So there were some instances where several artists were upset that some of their designs were taken and made into toys. I can speak to Don being upset by that, and as well as some of the IDW guys, IDWA, being bothered with Drift being made into a toy and asking, well, we created this, and having to explain to them through our licensing team what exactly they owned and what they didn't, and what they owned was unfortunately nothing except the original art.
Mm-hmm. I will say, just on Dreamwave, that two-page splash that he did for was either Wizard or Toy Fair. I can't remember which one it was. Where Megatron had the cannon on the wrong arm originally. But it was that big splash page that was done for one of their. I think it was Toy Fair. It was one of their top 100 toy lines of all time or something. Mm-hmm. That's what got me excited for Transformer comics again. After the end of G1 and after the G2 series ended, I really wasn't expecting to see anything else from Transformers comics. And seeing that artwork really got me excited again and got me wanting to try some more comics. Sadly, with Dreamwave, the only thing I really enjoyed about Dreamwave was their Armada series was much more interesting than the cartoon. And I was really looking forward to see where Energon was going to go, because I was enjoying the start of Energon being completely different than where Armada would have left off, and we just never got there. But I will say they made Armada and Energon better to me, which is not necessarily an easy thing.
Yeah.
Well, I think at that point they were just trying to, okay, what writer can we bring on board, and how can we get the collectors, because obviously kids don't really buy comics, how can we get the collectors on board this kid-centric book? And then they brought in Simon, and then they had their G1 cameos, and I think that was the strategy behind that.
Yeah.
Bringing in collectors by catering to their G1 side.
And with the comics, we actually knew what the mini-cons were saying.
Instead of just, they didn't have to hire voice actors, so... It was going to be easier to give them dialogue, I guess.
Yeah.
But I did. I agree with Don. Like the Armada comics was fantastic in the sense that you actually had a build up to what was happening to the mini cons. You know, there was a reason why the Autobots were on Earth. And don't get me wrong. I personally defended Armada Micron Densetsu to Don and the others, as well as Superlink and Energon. Mm-hmm. And even I thought that, oh man, the comics was fantastic. And Energon wasn't as good, I personally felt. I felt like it was a continuation for the sake of continuation in the Dreamwave comics, although I would have loved to have seen the ending, reading like the synopsis of the comic of the issues that never were released. I would have loved to have seen the ending to that. But you know, yeah. It didn't happen. And the whole Dreamwave thing really pissed me off, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Especially as a comic collector.
For people who don't know what happened with Dreamwave, you know, I chalk it up to an experience where Hasbro was hungry to get their brands out there, and they kind of realized we can make money through licensing. And I think that's how those first couple of licensing deals came about. And you had a lot of young talent at Dreamwave, and they weren't the best at being financially responsible. You have so many artists who to this day have never been paid for their work. Some of these guys are friends with me. You have books that never got released, and you have Hasbro has a couple $100,000 in debt thanks to Dreamwave and how it all collapsed. And it was all very secretive how it was happening. You had a lot of artists starting to complain online, well, we haven't been paid, we haven't seen any previews for this or any solicitations, but we've handed the books in. And you wouldn't hear anything from Hasbro or Dreamwave, and it just kind of, one day the ball just dropped, and it was over. And the comics were done for a couple of years, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My first... exposure to the comics. It's myself. Well, there's a reason I'm wearing this Dinobot shirt today, because I actually still have the very same comic that was my very first issue of Transformers, and it was this one right here with number 8.
That's the one. It was issue 8.
Yeah, this is issue number 8 was my very very first one. That's and yeah. I even remember where I got it. I was living in Florida at the time, in the Florida Everglades, and there's a grocery store in Everglades City called Reeves Grocery Store, and my mom and I, we would go in there after school, because my mom worked in a cafeteria, and we'd go in there after school to pick up things, and And sometimes while she's shopping, I would go over to the magazine rack and look at magazines and stuff like that. Well, I was a huge Transformer fan at the time. I was totally unaware that there was even a comic book. You know, I mean, season one was, it might have even been into season two of the cartoon whenever I actually discovered the comics. And this comic was like the lone Transformer comic on the shelf. And it was like partially buried. And I picked it up and I was instantly enthralled by it. And ever since then, I would pick up every issue that I found. I would miss, I think there might have been from issue 8 through issue 80, I might have missed 5, maybe 6 issues. And then I missed that initial 7, which, you know, later on, you know, thankfully to illegal comic scans, I was able to go back and read issues 1 through 7 as an adult. But it was, and also the missing issues, but it was actually a surreal moment for me because I'd loved comic books up to that point because I was a huge fan I had the Archie comics and a few other things that I followed quite regularly. And then here's a Transformer comic. And I think one of the things that really latched onto me was that the story was so vastly different from what we had in the cartoon. I think one of the things that the cartoon, you know, only has say 24, 25 minutes to get a story across. And then you might not have a huge story arc like you might have in a comic book. Whereas, you know, I think the initial comics in the first 20 or so issues, they might not have had so much a lasting story arc. I mean, you had some story arcs, you know, like Circuit Breaker, which there's a name that you never hear anymore, Circuit Breaker, Josie Beller. I love that character, and it's just gone in the forgotten annals of time now. You know, the mechanic, scraplets, you know, the things that were comic only that we never got in the cartoon until, Transformers Prime mentioned the scraplets, you know. As a matter of fact, I think there was an entire episode dedicated to scraplets, was it not?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of have an idea.
They want to call the mini-cons. I'm like, no.
I have a suspicion that we have someone to thank for that, don't we? let's talk a little bit about what was different. What made the comics, the original Marvel comics, different from the cartoon, and what really set them apart. And me personally, I think the number one thing that set them apart is the stories were darker and more elevated, I think, even to an adult level. I mean, more so than the cartoon. But that's my opinion. I was kind of wondering what you guys...
I agree on that. Just the first few issues alone of Marvel, you see things that if you grew up with only the cartoon, it would almost seem uncharacteristic behavior from some of them at first. I think it was Jazz or Hound, one of them, that actually shot at Sparkplug in one panel.
Well, he shot to stop him from – he shot over him with his flamethrower to keep him from escaping the base.
It ended up hurting him.
Yeah, it's hard as that, yeah.
But, just things like that. Or Autobots, you know, regularly getting, you know, ripped apart or, you know, heck, that one issue had Ratchet and Megatron fused together. And that's kind of a morbid thing, you know. Just, you know, holding a sign saying, help us.
That was one of the most iconic covers. One and the All Are Dead with Shockwave.
Yes.
I think those are two of the most iconic covers in Transformers history, honestly.
Yeah.
Because the All Are Dead cover keeps getting rehashed.
I know DW did one, and then IDW did one, and then I think the UK did their own version, which was Galvatron standing over all the bodies from Target 2006, shouting, "They're all dead."
For me, Marvel one, the difference was, like you said, Jordan, it was darker, and it was a little bit different, but characters that would never get a focus episode in the cartoon, you had either smaller important roles or just interesting side stories. Like
Skids.
Exactly. With that one issue 19, after, you know, with the girl and having the life with just a car, you know, not wanting to fight anymore, and then having the daydream with the Wild West showdown with Megatron that you never would have saw that. I don't think anyone come with, you know, Skids fighting Megatron in the Wild West.
Optimus Prime on a floppy disk.
I mean, who would have thought you would see Skids on cover art?
Exactly.
There you go. Skids versus Megatron. I mean,
but it's just, and Blaster versus Grimlock for leadership of the Autobots,
which was awesome.
And then you had the great return to Cybertron, where we went back to Cybertron. So how things was, we introduced Straxus. But yeah, that was my thing. Is small characters that would not get a animated focus episode played a role, even not a huge role, in the comics. That's what I like Skids.
Oh wow! Apparently, Circuit Breaker had a Kreon in one of the comics.
Really?
Yeah, not a figure, but just one of the Creo Transformer comic strips. Circuit Breaker makes a cameo.
I always wondered though why we didn't get a scantily clad lady with circuitry applied to her body.
I don't know, but
strategic places as an action figure.
I don't know, but it's
I'd buy that for a dollar.
It's weirdly adorable. I'm looking at the art here on the TF Wiki.
Well, Circuit Breaker is a Marvel owned character, not a Hasbro owned character.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, because she appeared in Secret Wars 2 with the Beyonder first.
That's right. Yeah. So if we were to get a Circuit Breaker, which I doubt anyone over on the Marvel team even knows exists, she'd be part of the Marvel line.
Yeah. It'll probably have to wait until Disney buys Hasbro.
Yeah. There was talk back when David Bonner was in charge of Marvel. He was the one who said, "We got to do Death's Head." And him and I were always planning, all right, you're going to do Death's Head. And this was certainly before all the terminations at Hasbro. Hmm. Okay, well, let's do Death's Head, but let's do a carded version on a Transformers card back, and we will sell it at BotCon. But unfortunately, David was let go, and shortly thereafter, I was gone too. So,
I guess they really hated the idea then, huh?
Could have been.
Yeah. Right. But, you know, now that we've got Marvel Legends and all that kind of stuff, I still keep hoping for some Neo Knights. I'm sorry, I just love the Neo Knights. And again, you've got, but then, of course, that brings up the whole with Spider-Man and issue 3. Mm-hmm. Is it in Marvel 616? Is it a different continuity? You know, it's all those.
No, but after the four initial issues, when they turned it into a main series, they Marvel editorial specified that Transformers didn't take place in 616. It literally specifies it, even though in one of the issues of Amazing Spider-Man, and I know this because I'm a Spider-Man fan, he mentions going to Portland, which is where Transformers happens, and it's totally off-panel. Like it's literally not in the comic series, but he says, "Oh, you know, in my most recent trip to Portland," and he's never been to Portland any of the previous issues.
Wow,
it is just really convoluted. But editorial basically went, "No, Transformers doesn't take place in 616." And I have to ask Dawn, why do you like the Neo Knights? They are crap.
I like the Neo Knights.
Okay, the reason is because their powers are not awesome. I mean, Raptures has a lot of potential. Dynamo does too. Thunder Punch is a little goofy, but that's a good kind of Marvel goofy. It's just the fact that they're different. They actually have a little bit of characterization. You know, their motives of fighting the Decepticons. I mean, how would you like to see a bunch of Sentinels show up at Xavier's, and all you have there are the students? Then out of nowhere, on a splash page, you got the Neo Knights coming in, they're now fighting Sentinels and other evil robotic entities in the Marvel Universe if they were part of the regular 616 or whatever universe they're in. It's just something different, something different. I hate seeing wasted potential. And I think the Neo Knights, if they could have transitioned them away from Transformers into the greater Marvel Universe, even if it was another alternate version, could have been interesting.
Try to bring them to Marvel, though? Sorry.
Didn't
they try to bring them to the Marvel comics? I thought they did.
Simon Furman Wildman, I've had Mr. Wildman sent me a letter, an email several years ago after talking to him at BotCon. That Techno X would have been a X-Men style title with them transitioning into a Marvel universe proper, and in the comic it would have been that their adventures in the Transformers comic was a Cerebro Danger Room style training exercise.
Interesting. That's pretty cool.
And then they would have been fighting the mechanical, technologically advanced in villains, because that's kind of their thing. You know, you don't have somebody fighting the evil robots as their main thing.
Shogun Warriors?
No. I mean, you know, even the Exiles went to a universe where there was a Shogun Warrior style defender. So, I mean, but you know, that's why I like. You know, I like oddball characters. I don't like seeing wasted potential.
Every superhero character really has potential. Even the lamest of powers are still cool, because you know they're superpowers. They're extraordinary superhuman abilities. You look at characters like Wolverine with his healing factor and his heightened senses. You look at say Scott Summers with his optic blast. You look at Deadpool with his sarcasm and breaking of the fourth wall. Well, I mean, that in itself is a superpower right there.
Yeah, but here's the thing. They don't always take advantage of that, because otherwise you wouldn't have had Avengers Arena, which killed off members of Young Avengers, Avengers Academy, and a couple of other younger heroes, all for a Hunger Games cash-in ripoff where they destroyed characters that they've been working on for 3 and 4 years because they couldn't think about anything else to do with them other than kill them off in a quick cash-in.
They couldn't have sent them upstairs to clean their room like in a sitcom or something?
Hey, at least they got feature comics. Like, you think about it, like the Hornet, who was part of the Slingers, gets killed off-panel. He's just a body on the ground. You get characters who were released in 1990.
Not even the right guy.
Yeah. It's the original. No, it's the new Hornet. It wasn't the Peter Parker Hornet. It was the other guy.
It wasn't him. The body they showed was not the Hornet from the Slingers. That wasn't him.
But he's confirmed as dead, though, in the Marvel Universe.
I know, but I'm just saying, without getting too much on a tangent, the actual character they drew of being dead doesn't look anything like the character that was in the armor for Slingers.
Oh yeah. No. In the Spider-Man comics, in the Q&A thing, they mentioned it was him, but drawn wrongly because they gave the wrong art to the artist.
Now I'm even madder.
But then, you know, it's like in 1994, I think, they did all the annual comics for all the main Marvel comics, got like new characters that get introduced, and then a lot of them get wiped out because they didn't know what to do with them after they got introduced in those annuals. Like, I was reading random comics and going, oh, the Bottom's dead. Oh, well. He's like had just one outing with Captain America. He's dead.
You know you have a pretty lame character when you can't even die right in the comics.
Yeah, but it's just the writers have no idea what to do with them. They've gone, yep, their story arc's over. Let's just kill him. Yoo-hoo!
That's one thing I had seen them do is have more. When I was reading Marvel G1, I kept thinking, why are the Avengers not showing up? Why is the Fantastic Four not here fighting the Decepticons?
Mm-hmm.
That was something I would have loved to see more in Marvel G1.
Yeah. Even so, I still take my my Mega Bloks black suit Spidey and hang him from my Creo Megatron. It works perfectly.
Well, you know, Don, when characters like that show up, I get a little disappointed because you have like that Avengers Transformers crossover between Marvel and Dream and IDW.
Yeah.
And okay, it was all right. But
I forgot about that.
It existed in the Transformers universe, but it didn't exist in the Marvel universe, unfortunately. And it's stuff like that. That just kind of cheapens the overall story for me.
Yeah.
Really? But I swear that in New Avengers, they reference gigantic robots.
Hmm. I mean, maybe, but, you know, how many different giant robots are out there, you know?
Yeah, I know, but I said they did a one-panel reference.
But now, going back to the darkness of the original comics, I mean, another thing that they had quite frequently in the original Marvel run that you just did not see in the cartoons, and at least until the movie anyway, was character death. Optimus Prime was killed off in what? Within the first like 10 or 12 issues, you know, I mean, and then his entire, no, imagine this though, his entire consciousness stored on a 3.5 inch floppy disk.
I don't even think that was the 1.4 megabytes. I think that was like the 700 and some odd kilobyte version.
Yeah. It's like, wow.
Probably even worse.
That's even bad. When everything that could destroy the world was saved on a floppy disk.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But, and you know, at the time, it really didn't come to the forefront of your mind whenever, I mean, as a reader, even as a kid, it didn't dawn on me. It's like, wow, everything he knows is stored on this little floppy disk. But at that time, that floppy disk stored so much information for that time period. And, gigabytes, terabytes, it was just so far beyond my comprehension as a person. You know, I mean, it just really didn't sink in until as an adult, whenever I had a computer that had a 200 gigabyte hard drive, you know, and this is back in the early 2000s, when I had a computer had a 200 gigabyte hard drive, or 2 gigabyte hard drive or what have you, and then you see Prime's consciousness stored on a floppy disk. You're like, really? Shouldn't it have been like 2,000 of those things or something? But you have things like that, but you have the character death. You have the more in-depth characters like Skids and Ratchet. Ratchet is like an unsung hero, you know, and then gets melted together with Megatron. Help me. It just moments like that you do not have in the cartoon. And then you have the overwhelming story arcs, characters that never appeared in the cartoon, period. Thunderwing, the Micromasters. I mean, who could forget the issue, you know, me being a big wrestling fan, and then you get this issue with Transformers, and you got Road Handler, holding somebody up in the air in a wrestling ring. I'm like, yes!
That is.
Yeah, you know, it's stuff like that you can do in comics that you can't get away with in shows, and I think about the Beast Wars comic books, and I think this is part of the Dreamwave storyline, but he had Razor Beast, and he was this little wild boar character, this basic figure released in Beast Wars. But they did such an amazing job of making him such a key figure in the story that now I have my Razor Beast right in front, on the front of my Beast Wars shelf, so I can always see him.
Well, that was IDW, and but it was written when DW was in charge of the Transformers franchise, so Rick's not wrong.
Okay.
But yeah, I did like that. Well, you know, they brought characters from Beast Wars 2nd, Beast Wars Neo, and you know, you mentioned what happens to Magmatron in it. It was really well written, and the art was fantastic. I really liked that series.
And even in today with IDWA or IDW, bringing in the European characters or bringing in the Japanese characters, Deathsaurus was in it, Thunderclash is in a comic, Victory Saver, Overlord, and taking a character like Overlord and making him such a compelling character that I really want a nice Overlord figure about this size.
And making characters, and IDW is perfect at making characters that before really nobody gave two shits about, honestly. And taking them and making characters that people love and adore, Swerve. People love Swerve now. You know, 5 years ago, 2 years ago, maybe 2 years ago, but you know, 5 years ago, if somebody would have told me. Swerve is a really popular character. I would have looked at you and went, "Really, Swerve?"
Swerve. Yeah. Or, I mean, look at Skids.
Yeah,
as well. And because of that comic, is that we got that awesome Generation Skids toy,
Which I love. I've got the cross cut, which I think is a prettier deco of it. But actually, I still need to ship it off to Chad. I got it for him at TF Expo and I'm still got it. But yeah, I mean, gorgeous deco on that thing, you know?
Right.
Great toy.
Never did see either one of those in stores.
WK Toys has had them for $10.
Nice.
Check them out.
Never saw a Windblade or RC or Crummy either.
No.
Talking about characters and I mentioned Circuit Breaker earlier. I wonder how Generations RC would look with like a pale pink deco and then like light maybe teal or blue circuit pattern all over her body, kind of like make her a Circuit Breaker and call her Circuit Breaker. You know,
that
I mean,
definitely sounds like a TFCC figure.
Interesting.
I gotta say this, darn. I'm sorry. A Transformers Collectors Club set, robotic version of the Neo Knights. In one universe, the Neo Knights are an elite Autobot Strike Force.
I mean, they tried the Strike Force thing with. I was still a part of it at that point with the Elite Guard. So, and the original idea behind that was, all right, let's make them all the same deco. They're like camo. They're a special elite unit, and it fortunately didn't work out quite that way.
I think I made Doran facepalm there with that one.
Yeah, he did. Now let's talk about. We know IDW is like. Masters at taking characters that nobody really cares about and turning them into something that is memorable and significant. And Marvel, we mentioned Skids and Ratchet. You know, are there some other characters that Marvel and even maybe even Dreamwave made into characters that we consider as popular or top or semi-popular characters now? I mean,
now. You know, the first one that comes to my mind is Brainstorm.
Okay.
IDW has a way of taking characters that either got no attention or little attention or were in the Japanese series and giving them these great story arcs. And Brainstorm, to me, is kind of the epitome of that. Who could have ever thought that Brainstorm was part of the Decepticons, and he was part of the DJD. And for 2 years, we were wondering, well, what's in that suitcase? What's in that suitcase? And we come to find out, 2 years later, it's a time machine. And he's going back in time to assassinate Megatron as soon as he comes off the assembly line. But to do that, he had to give up his Autobots. And one of the best parts about that was he has the face mask, but when he takes it off, he's got the Japanese style, the toy-inspired face. He's got the lips. And behind the face mask, that's where he keeps his Decepticon symbol. Right there.
Mm. Yeah, it's too bad that the toy couldn't have had a removable faceplate for that, too. But, you know, accessories, losable things, you know. But
there is that Swerve-esque figure that came with the drinks and the tray, which was pretty cool.
Yeah. Now, another one I can think of, and I believe this one was during the Dreamwave period of time, Sunstorm.
Yes. Probably my favorite story from the Dreamwave era.
That was Stormbringer.
That one dealing with Sunstorm.
But wasn't that the Stormbreaker arc?
No, Storm.
No, it was the one with Jetfire, was it? It was on. It was in the ongoing, I think, because Stormbreaker was on the Thunderwing.
Yeah. The great thing about that whole saga with Sunstorm was this is a science fiction story. These are characters that exist in a robotic world. They're robotic organisms. They're sentient. And we kind of forget that there could also be something more mystical, something more unexplained, such as the people who are religious in our world. You can't always explain religion. You can't really prove or disprove it. And with Sunstorm, they kind of tackle that. And Jetfire, he has that assumptions, like, you know, this whole time we've been trying to explain him with science as to what he is and why he has his powers, but he's something otherworldly. He's something that we're not meant to understand, and he's something from beyond science.
Hmm. There you go, Rick.
Yep. I need that.
For those of you who are watching the video, I'm holding up Generations Brainstorm, and I've got a little yellow briefcase in his hand. That briefcase is from G.I. Joe Shockwave. It's the Shockwave briefcase. I got it off of eBay for like $4.
Did you paint it, or was it yellow like that?
It was already yellow.
Oh, there you go. That's a beautiful thing.
It's a little bit big, but it works. I mean... but yes, Sunstorm, that story arc, and I agree with you, Rick, from all of the Dreamwave stuff, the Sunstorm arc was probably my favorite. You know, you got in the late Marvel stuff, the things with Primus and the whole Nucleon Quest thing, you know. I'm by no means a fan of Action Masters or anything like that. I mean, to me, the whole idea of non-transforming Transformers is ridiculous because, I mean, it's the whole gimmick of the line, and you take that gimmick away, and what do you have? G.I. Joe figures, you know, which there's nothing wrong by that, but, you know, it kind of defeats the purpose. However, in the original Marvel run with the story of Nucleon Quest, it gives... it reason and it makes sense, and it almost makes the toys worth buying for me because just for the inability to transform, and it's explained through the Nucleon Quest, and yes, I know you're a huge Action Master. Well, Rick left the chat.
He hates Action Masters so much, he's just walked away once you started talking about it.
Wow.
But I mean, Action Masters are almost explained well enough to me that they're worth it. But what are some other things that were brought out in the comics that we never saw a light of day in the cartoon?
Nightbeat? I was going to say, Nightbeat was really popular back in the Marvel series when they did Matrix Quest.
Mm-hmm.
Because Simon Furman really liked writing him. Kills him off in G2, which is funny. And then now in IDW, he's this like massive character again. You know, it's just this interesting thing where a character that you wouldn't have really thought would be a great character gets really popular in Marvel and then gets used again in IDW. It just like transcends two totally different series of of companies, really.
Yeah,
that was what I thought.
Yeah, it covers a lot of space between those, like a vast predatory bird.
Yeah, Simon Furman, I actually had the honor to sit down and have dinner with him back at BotCon 2006, I believe, in Lexington. I sat, and it was me, my first wife, Simon Furman, Pauline Newstone, Air Razor from Beast Wars, and Blue Man Kuma. The five of us were sitting at one table, and it was just us five. And the discussions were just amazing, and I actually was talking with Simon Furman, and I told him, I said, like you, Don, one of my favorite story arcs, I believe was not his, but it was in Generation One Marvel, was the Headmaster series. And I sat there for like 15 minutes talking about the Headmasters, how much I loved them and everything. And then he says, that's all great. But he said, I really can't stand Headmasters. He said, I never got the reasoning behind it. He says, no matter how much I thought and tried to come up with something that made it plausible to me as a writer, he said, I had difficulty doing that. But it's one of those things. It's like, why do robots need people to drive them? But
I have to say, with the Headmasters, I think how the animated series explained it felt better than the comics. I have to say, like the way they explained it, that with a human counterpart, they reacted faster than they would if they were just on their own.
Yeah.
Whereas the comic didn't really... The comic was more along the lines of, we take off our heads in tribute so that we won't kill you, to prove that we're not going to try to kill you. And then the Nebulans are like, we need your heads so that we can combine with you to fight fight the enemy. That's it. That was
Sorry, go ahead.
I think by the end of the conversation I had with Simon, though, I had him somewhat convinced on Headmasters. Mainly because I have a very biased opinion on them, but I hopefully sold him on the idea of them. Mm. Now let's talk about the Primus and Unicron, that little story arc toward the end of Generation One. Anybody have any thoughts on that? And Rick just messaged me his internet crapped out, by the way. He didn't just leave.
Oh, no, I thought he was sick of Action Masters. I really like the whole Primus Unicron thing. I think Simon Furman may have written something similar to it in the UK comic book series, if I remember correctly, about how Unicron was a god. And I love that he came out with a counterpart because it kind of made sense. Although how he was introduced as a giant head screaming was a bit weird, I must admit.
Primal scream.
Shot in the head. It goes like, oh, and then in the distance, Unicron hears him.
that also leads into a nice little segue here. For those of you who are listening for the Unite With Us giveaway, it is now time for our clue for... the Unite With Us giveaway is clue number four, and here is your clue. The clue, kind of related to what we were just talking about, is deity. Deity.
Da, da, da.
Deity is the clue for this week.
Deity.
Deity. So if you're writing down the clues, deity is this week's clue. That's all I'm going to say about that. Good luck to everybody who's playing, and hopefully you guys will get it at the end. The giveaway is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. CapturedPrey.com. You can save on orders of $150 or more with free shipping. And also, you also can save more through the Capture Prey loyalty program. So the more you buy, the more you can save. Also, check out our other sponsor, Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection while minimizing your cost with MegaToyFan.com. You can find Mega Toy Fan at the biggest toy conventions year-round, such as BotCon and the upcoming TFCon. Mega Toy Fan will be there, so check them out.
Wow. Rick's back and Don's back.
Don's back and Rick's back. Yes.
Yes. But, like Rick has returned and Don's actual back. So
yeah. Before the Unite With Us thing that we just did, Rick, we were talking about a couple things. One of the things we were talking about was the Unicron and Primus story arc in the Marvel. You have any comments on that on the Primal screen?
You cut out a little bit. Was it the regeneration?
No, the original Marvel run with the battle between Primus and Unicron. It was basically the introduction of Unicron into the comic story.
Oh, you're asking me?
I'm just seeing if you had any thoughts on it.
Since I got into the comic books later. As a collector, the first time I actually read that comic was at BotCon 2001. I think it was Durham, North Carolina. It might have been 2002. And Simon Furman was there. And I remember being so impressed that finally, after all these years, I finally knew where he came from. And I finally learned for the first time about Primus and that he was Cybertron. And it took the story of the Transformers to a whole other cosmic level. And we made sure that once we created what we ended up calling the Binder of Revelation at Hasbro, that was the origin story for the Transformers.
What was it called?
The Binder of Revelation. It was this big book that we created at Hasbro that had basically, it was the ultimate brand Bible. Yeah. And it was meant to be given to people, licensees, comic book guys, TV show guys, saying this is everything there is to know that you need to know about Transformers.
I would be interested to see something like that. Just to.
There's only a few copies of it, and they're all numbered.
Yeah, just to get kind of a viewpoint from the outside looking in. Just kind of
coming up with that book with Simon. And a couple other people, Chris Royal was there, and we had a super secret meeting at Hasbro, and that was kind of the start of it. But we all could agree that story of Unicron and Primus being battling each other from another dimension, forcing themselves into our reality, that reality thrusting them apart, Unicron going one way, Primus striking some asteroids, becoming the planet Cybertron and spawning new life. That, to me and to us at Hasbro, that was a definitive creation story of the Transformers.
I'm a little bit of a disadvantage as far as the later issues with that story arc. As even in my later years, I've never obtained those issues. My highest issue of GM Marvel that I ever got was, I think, like 48 or 49. So I still to this day have not read those. However, how I've seen those characters and the battle that started there in the Marvel Comics play out in different incarnations over the years has been wonderful. So
yeah.
I definitely want to one of these days check out where that all began.
Now let's. Before we wrap up, we're going a little bit long today. I can only actually be on to about 4:15 here, so let's talk real quick about the biggest character changes that IDW has done and jump characters by leaps and bounds. And then I want to end by talking to Rick if he wants to talk about his involvement with the Regeneration 1 and everything. So let's talk about the IDW character changes. What's some of the more notable ones?
obviously Swerve. Swerve's bar. I love how More Than Meets the Eye starts off with Swerve talking to a patron, and he's kind of cleaning the glass or pouring them a drink, and he's kind of the loud mouth, and he's telling them, hey, did you hear about this? Yeah, we did that. Yeah, I got shot in the face. Yeah, I was a hologram for a long time, but nobody noticed. Swerve.
That's it, true.
It's like Razor Beast was in that Beast Wars comic, that he needs to be on the front of my shelf now. Now and forever, he's on the front of my shelf because of that comic. And it just shows you that the you don't just need a TV show to develop these characters.
I want to get – Don will probably know what I'm talking about here. But from Gal Gigar, the big order room table with the chairs that sit around it and everything, I want to get one of those and set some Transformers around it, get some little bitty martini glasses and stuff, sit around it and have Swerve.
Can get a cardboard version of that, by the way, Duron, for like 800 yen. It's a cardboard version of it that hosts the deluxe versions of the Galgaiger toys.
Anyway. Forget about the elephant in the room, who's now the plastic elephant in the room, Ultra Magnus and Minimus Prime. That's
Minimus Embus.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think this whole time Ultra Magnus is just a dude inside of a dude. And so, that the real Ultra Magnus died millions of years ago, and just people have been taking up the mantle, kind of like the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Is it me, or whenever I think of that whole the Minimus Ambus sitting inside the big armor and everything, I think back to the very first Men in Black and that little that dude, that little alien that was inside the dude's face.
That's what it is.
Oh, you're right. Yeah,
that's what I think
of.
When
inside of a dude pretending to be a different dude.
Yes. Yeah. So basically, Ultra Magnus in the comic is the big guy.
The way I always imagined it, since I first learned of Minimus Ambus, do you remember Pinky and the Brain, where Brain would wear that robot suit that was in the tuxedo, and you'd have a little bitty mouse head on top?
Yes.
Right.
Kind of like that. Yes. But even so, I was actually sitting here fidgeting with the Commander Wars Ultra Magnus, and I can't help but notice, anytime I look at the vehicle mode from Minimus Ambus, that is totally G1 RC.
No.
Incarno, that is so close.
No. It looks more like a hot rod to me.
I could see that too.
But let's also mention one of the bigger changes to impact Transformers canon. And characters that have switched sides.
Ooh.
Like Megatron.
Yeah.
Whoever thought Megatron would switch to the Autobot side and stay there for a good amount of time? And
I find that a hard pill to swallow. Being the G winner, you know, I find it a hard pill to swallow though.
You got to read it, because the whole dynamic between Megatron, Hot Rod, and Ultra Magnus, they play off each other perfectly.
I get that. I get that. And I understand how it will fit in the canon of the comic. But, you know, being a G1 guy from the cartoon's point of view, because growing up, the cartoon was my canon. Even though I read the comics, the cartoon was my first exposure. It's what sunk into me is this is a Transformers story. Mm-hmm. And just the whole idea of Megatron being an Autobot is just like, it's a trap, you know?
Yeah. And I think they're trying to play it like that. I think they're trying to say, it's not real, it can't be real. And then Ravage shows up, and Ravage and Megatron speak in that secret voice that only they understand. But I think... I can tell you that idea has been floating around for a long time, and while I was at Hasbro, I said, no, you can't do it. That's just, you can't do it. And I was so wrong, because they've done an amazing job with reinventing that character. And oftentimes with IDW, since you have so many characters, they do their story arc, and then that character goes away, and it's kind of a background character, like Sunstreaker. Mm-hmm. He had this great story arc, but now he's just kind of chilling in the back of the Lost Light.
Sunstreaker,
so
isn't
it gives a reason for Megatron to be there after the war has ended.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Rick, you had some input into Regeneration 1. What exactly was your role, and what did you contribute?
So this was another thing where we at Hasbro didn't want to do it because, and I attribute this to Aaron Archer, because he was all about, we need to move forward and not live in the past anymore. And it took the G.I. Joe revival comic that picked up the original Marvel G.I. Joe series. It took that being one of the best-selling comics for IDW for licensing to say, hey, IDW needs to make money. They make money. We make money. They need to put this comic book out. So we finally reluctantly agreed, but we set some rules, and we said, all right, it's got to end at issue 100. And because there was already an issue 80, that they did like the recap issue to make it a full 20 issues. And we said, all right, the story has to end. It has to have a definitive ending. I don't care how it ends, but I remember giving Simon my notes saying it has to have a definitive ending. Either Optimus dies or Rodimus becomes leader. I don't care how, but it has to have a definitive ending. And to me, the story of the Transformers is the journey of Optimus Prime.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the name Regeneration 1. So that was a name I had come up with, and I threw it out to Michael Kelly at Hasbro, who is the liaison for IDW. And he just kind of looked at me like, because we were trying to come up with what the name of this comic would be. Okay. They weren't going to use it. I threw it to the licensing team when they were about to redo the whole Generations thing. I'm like, Regeneration 1. And they're like, but we're not making Generation 1. But it's Generations. Yes. So they didn't understand because they don't know the brand. So IDW came to visit. It was John Barber and Chris Royale, and they're sitting across from me and Michael Kelly and Andy, I forget his name now, Andy Schmidt, who was the former editor-in-chief of IDW at the time. He was working with us at Hasbro. And I told him a story. I'm like, I told you guys. I told them. Nobody got it. I'm going to tell you directly. And I looked at Chris Royale, and I said, Transformers Regeneration 1. And he said, that's it. That's the name. Done. So finally, I finally got something pushed through. I just had to tell three different people. got done.
You had to tell the right people.
Yeah.
You know, that just begs, this is a whole episode in and of itself. Just, you know, the difference between corporate Hasbro and fans. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to talk about that sometimes, is what, you know what the fans perceive and what Hasbro perceives as a corporate entity,
yeah,
is a whole totally different beasts. Yeah, totally different beasts, and I like to talk about that sometime. But, and it's not necessarily a negative thing, but it explains a lot of things. I think it would. Mm-hmm. But Regeneration 1, I was able to read maybe, and I was able to get maybe the first 4 or 5 issues of it, and that's about the time that I went through some life changes, and I moved away, and things just, it wasn't conducive to me to reading it, and I fell so far behind on it, and by the time I was ready to go back and read them, finding places that could get them to me quickly and easily, and in order, seemed a little difficult. But I have not read the final issues of Regeneration 1, but I heard that it kind of ended in a lackluster way, I guess.
Yeah, it just kind of ends. And there's really no, like, wrap-up story. It does tell you this is a battle that will go on forever and across the universe and take on many different shapes and forms, and that it's bigger than the characters that we have known. But it just sort of ends, and I love Simon. He's a friend of mine. But the one thing that really bothered me the most was just the kind of the destruction of the whole Generation 2 storyline with Regeneration 1, that it erased that whole thing. And I really like Jaxxus and the way he was explained in that comic. And while he was in Regeneration 1, it just wasn't quite the same.
Without any spoilers, Duran, I was a big Regeneration 1 fan, probably the biggest of anyone in the circles I travel. Because it started out feeling like it really picked up to a degree where 80 left off. Although I wish they had picked up right after the end of 80, but that's neither here nor there. But the pacing towards the end really hurt the series. And I don't know what I wanted, but what I got wasn't it. That's the best way I can describe it for me.
So did it feel rushed, kind of like the rebirth?
Well, they
were trying to tie up way too many things. Do you feel that was the case?
Yeah, I think that's it. It's just there were some issues early on in the late 80s, 90s that I think could have been two or three things that they could have told that story in less issues. Just pace out the last, say, six. And it's just maybe if I go back and reread them because I had my subscription split between two places at the time because I was still dealing with after Mom's death and getting my comics in two different places. So I'd have something to read whenever I was down at the house there. So maybe if I pull them out and read them in order, you know, start to finish, it would make more sense. But even then, when I was reading four or five issues catching up, it was too disjointed. But again, that could just...
Yeah. Now, we'll be wrapping up here in the next minute or two, but overall stories that we got in the comics from Marvel, Dreamwave, IDW, it could be argued that in today's Transformers fandom, what's coming up in the chat here?
thanks, Rick.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for that. but what could be argued is that the comics are pretty much the main focus of the fandom right now, as far as collectors. We don't really have a cartoon because the RID 2.0 is more aimed at the younger demographic. Older kids, or like us, really don't have anything outside of the comics. And to me, that's one of the reasons why I lament the fact that I don't actually... I choose not to read the comics right now, and that's just a time issue. But it's not something like, oh, I'm opposed to the comics. I don't ever want to read the comics. One day, I know they're books. I can go back and read them some other time. So anybody have any thoughts on the current state of comics and their effect on Transformers?
Well, one thing, it's not really the current state, but there's one comic publisher that we have not talked about, and there's not much to talk about, but I think we would be remiss in not mentioning Blackthorn Publishing with Transformers 3D and How to Draw Transformers. Just for the sheer weirdness of their publications. Just if you ever see them in a bin somewhere, pick them up because they're very interesting.
We're trolling each other in the text chat here.
I'm ignoring that. I'm just...
But Rick, you're surmising your surmising thoughts besides words.
Look, the comics are a great place for people to be creative and for stories to take on a life that they could never take in film or in animation. And I encourage everyone to go out, get some of the IDW trades. I've been following them since the very beginning, and the last 3-4 years of these comics have been mind-blowingly epic. And I'm very glad that IDW are the custodians of the comics right now.
Awesome.
Or as I call them, IDWA.
IDWA. Ping.
Oh, sorry. I didn't
hear.
I love the comics at the moment. I think they're really good in the sense that since they're targeting towards older fans or weirder fans as is with Transformers versus G.I. Joe. I think it's really good that we've got a different outlet, because I'm not digging Robots in Disguise at the moment, and even the comic isn't that fantastic. So yeah, I'm really happy with the state of the comics at the moment. And even if they get rid of the regular Transformers series and just stick with More Than Meets the Eyes, I'll be happy.
How about you, Jim?
The chat just totally derailed my train of thought.
Yeah.
What was the question about the current state of the comics?
The comics and their effect on the fandom.
Well, I've not been into the comics as much, admittedly. Though I have to say, I like the inclusion of comics in the Generations figures, the deluxes, like in Combiner Wars. Because I feel by including that, it adds a little bit of value to the figure, so you can learn a little bit more about the adventures that a lot of folks would have otherwise missed. Because a lot of places are really not carrying comic books much anymore, unless you go to like a specialty stop like Books a Million or things like that, local comic shops. And even those are few and far between, unless you're in kind of a bigger city. So I think it's a good way to get those stories and those comics out to the kids, to the fans, that wouldn't otherwise have readily easy access to them. So I think this is going to be a way to help prolong comics and even maybe even bring in new readers. Besides just watching the cartoons or playing the mobile games or whatever.
So overall, do you think that the comic books will endure? The IDW comics will keep it going for? Do you see it another 10 years, or do you or is it much a much shorter time?
As far as that depends, because digital comics are kind of a thing too. A lot of people have taken to embracing those, so they can watch them on their mobile device, on their smartphones, and what have you. But I'm reminded of something that Stan Lee said in an interview. As far as his thoughts on digital comics, and he said that it's never going to be as rewarding or as fulfilling as holding the actual comic in your hand. Kind of like holding certain bodily parts of the anatomy there. It's not as good unless you hold a real one in your hand.
Yeah. One thing that I think is a genius idea is the pack-in comic.
Yeah.
Behind the actual toy.
Exactly.
I understand there's cost that is involved here, and I understand that basically the inner comic is just old comics just recovered.
Sure.
But what I would love to see is if they continue like in the Generations line, just take. If they're going to do a Spotlight series, if they continue like a Spotlight on Crosscut, make a Spotlight on Crosscut where he is the central character and use that, and instead of just publishing it by itself like they normally would, use that as the pack-in material for Crosscut.
I could see that working extremely well. Yeah, that gives me kind of an idea of something, some way they can maybe approach that. Is
if they're going to do it anyway, I mean, it just seems like it would be logical.
Sure, sure. You would want stories to interconnect too. You wouldn't necessarily want always standalone, 18, 20 page stories, and that's it. So what they could do is maybe they could do like the same story, the same battle, from different perspectives, like Crosscut's interaction in this battle or this mission. If they bring back Horrid Bull or some obscure character like that, have his take on things, what the battle was like for him, who he interacted with, You know, and if you get all these issues from the wave, you can actually have the whole picture of what this event was like. You know, I don't know. Just a thought.
Mm-hmm.
But it would still spotlight the individuals.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot to think about, and we're going a little bit long. I've got to be at work in like an hour and 10 minutes here. So, you guys, we've had a great episode here. We're going to have some more Comic Central episodes coming up, maybe not next week or, you know, but in the coming weeks, in the coming months, we're going to have more Comic Central episodes. I think that's one thing that we've been lacking the most on TFYLP as far as content, and we're not ignoring it. It's just trying to think of a good way to do it. Like I said, we've got some comic related guests that we've been talking to. We're going to try to get them on here sometime shortly. I know Matt Frank, really close to getting him on and everything. I spoke with him at TF Expo, and he is totally jazzed about doing it. So we'll hopefully get him on sometime really soon. Anybody else have any closing thoughts before we wrap?
I guess I want to say that if you for the listeners, if you're wanting to read something that's kind of shocking in the original run of the comics, read Underbase. Seriously, read Underbase.
Oh God!
It was in the period where they went, hey, we need to introduce the new toys and wipe out the old toys. If you thought the movie was over, like was overkill, this is worse.
So, lots of slaughter.
The Underbase was the movie. The movie equivalent to kill off characters.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely.
With good reasoning as to why the others survive.
Yes. And change. Change. But what about you, Rick? Any closing thoughts? Yes.
Yes.
He didn't hear.
What?
Why?
Rick.
He's young.
I don't think he can hear us.
Rick?
Everyone is choppy.
Rick?
Everyone is choppy now.
Hi. Everybody's choppy.
Pork choppy.
Oh, why? Probably Google Plus being happy friendly again. Well, anyway, we've gone too long. Thank you, everyone, for listening to us this fine afternoon. I know it's a weird time and a weird day that we do it. Everybody's used to being 9 o'clock on Fridays. We will return to that most likely next week. Check out the Kickstarter for Play With Us 2 this Friday. That is going to go live probably. Would I be accurate if I say early morning, Rick? Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Friday morning, but maybe Thursday night.
Okay. So check that
definitely
out.
Definitely Friday.
All right. So check that out, and we will return to our regularly scheduled time at 9 p.m. On Friday next week, not this week, but next week, and join Cyburn 2 and his cast for the other TFYLP crew, and check out this episode whenever it comes via the audio download, whenever that will be. Probably this weekend. Without further ado, everybody have a good weekend, and we'll see you next time on Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure.
Later, all.
Later.
Bye, guys.
I'm getting Devastator.
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighty, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.